Welcome back to Supporting Both Ends of the Lead. I'm Caroline, a certified animal behaviourist.
And I'm Dr. Linda Blair, a clinical psychologist.
We're here to bring you today's double dose of well-being for you and your dog.
And it's time to get started, don't you think?
Hi there, everybody, and welcome back. I want you to pause for just a moment because today's episode might be a little hard-hitting for you. And I'd love to know whether you have a gut reaction to this question. This is the question that we're going to be discussing today. Ethically, should we own dogs? What did you think? I'd love to know what your gut reaction was to that. If you can just hop on over to Instagram and send us a message, we'd love to hear how you feel about that. So today's episode has been sparked by an article that Linda shared with me a few weeks back that was titled "Want to Truly Have Empathy for Animals? Stop Owning Pets." And it was by Troy Vertese over in The Guardian. So that was the sort of spark for the episode. But really, this episode could be about any animal that we interact with, any sort of species that aren't able to verbally express their needs to us. It could be about whether we ride horses or swim with dolphins. It could be about whether we breed cattle purely for meat or farm salmon. It could be even about us using pigeons to send messages for us. But we're talking about, should we own dogs? So Linda, when you first found that article, what was your gut reaction?
My first reaction was, help, I need Caroline. That's the truth. Because it upended my vision of both what we're doing and what I've done all my life. I've never had a moment that I can remember, even as a baby, without at least one dog in our family. So I immediately was flooded with confusion and guilt. That's why it hit me so hard. And I just thought, I need to talk to Caroline. This is a respected person who wrote this. She's an environmentalist and clearly cares about animals. And oh my goodness, oh no, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and it's such a hard one, isn't it? Because, you know, we choose to bring animals into our homes. But actually, when we go back historically, dogs have actually chosen to come near to us. So that human-dog relationship really has been symbiotic. In fact, in an earlier episode, I mentioned about how us humans have been a key part of the success of the canine species. We can even argue that evolutionary development of wolves is part down to the fact that wolves chose to be nearer humans, because then those pro-social sort of characteristics that help them to get food and regular sort of shelter from us humans was actually the bit that then made them successful. And that's how we ended up eventually with domesticated dogs. But should we have moved from that place where dogs were used to kind of working alongside us? Maybe we started to use them as working roles, but they still live that sort of outside, fairly free life, I guess we could say, to one where they're sitting on our sofas and providing us with companionship.
Well, yes, and it reminds me of my work, where I'm lecturing to parents so much now about being helicopter parents and not letting the child express itself to become who it's meant to be rather than what you want it to be. And that, I suppose, that now I realize that hit me too. I thought, oh God, how can I say that on the one hand and then be in favor of having a dog that isn't living a life that it would lead if it was in the wild at all? You know, it wouldn't wait for a bowl to be put down with food in it. I noticed my spaniel, for example, sleeping a lot some days, but comes alive the minute I go and hide a few treats for it, because clearly it's bored. And then I feel terrible, but then I forget because I don't want to remember that.
Yeah. And I think that is the thing, isn't it? It's about whether we should be, it's not necessarily about whether we should be owning dogs, but it's about the life that we provide for them. Because to be honest, we're in a situation where domesticated dogs are in a very large proportion of human households now. Yeah. And if we were to tomorrow to go, we just shouldn't have dogs in our lives anymore, what's going to happen to those dogs? What's going to happen to those people who rely upon dogs for work, for companionship, and, you know, importantly, for certain support roles, you know, for people who maybe need them for seeing dogs or for assistance dogs? There are many reasons why dogs are there for us, but we need to be there for them too. And I think it's about less about whether we should be living alongside our dogs, but making sure that we should be giving them the life that they would be allowed to have in as many ways as we possibly can.
And I think that's what reassured me when you put that argument to me. You didn't hesitate. I mean, of course you listened to what I said, but you didn't hesitate. And as soon as you started explaining that argument, I realized how absurd it would be just to open the door and say, well, you're free now, guys, you know, because that's a bred out of them. I mean, that they would die. And so we have to also be realistic with what the world is and how, as you say, we can let them do those treasure hunts and fulfill roles that feel so good to them by taking the time and the effort to think what, or to watch and find out what they like, not what I want them to like, just like the helicopter parents, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And do you know what? It's quite apt today that we are talking about this, because I don't know if you know, Linda, but it's actually National Puppy Day. So that's a time of recording, not when this podcast is going to go live. But so if we're thinking about bringing dogs into our life, particularly when they're a puppy, one thing that is really important is that we're thinking about ethically how those dogs have been raised. Have they been raised in the right conditions by the right parents? Are the breeders ethically choosing the right sire and mother for those puppies? Because unfortunately, we've had obviously a pandemic puppy boom in recent years, which has meant that the requirements for dogs has outweighed the sort of that existence of dogs initially. And so we were seeing huge increase in irresponsible breeding and completely unethical breeding as well. So I know you had some thoughts on that one as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of two of my friends that I've made friendships with only through dog walking, but they have both rescued bitches who were breed bitches. And I just want to get down on my knees and do a combination of thanking those dogs and also crying, because their teats are hanging way, way down. Their back is bowed. We can't let this keep happening. We just can't.
And I think that's something that we do need to commit to. We need to really hold ourselves accountable. And thinking about, you know, treating dogs at a higher level in terms of how important they are to us emotionally, we need to make sure that we're looking after them in a way that suits that. We need to commit to welfare, to the respect of those animals that we're sharing our lives with. And I'd love to hear actually from our lovely listeners as to kind of what they see themselves, what role they see themselves playing in their dog's lives. Or perhaps even one way that might indicate what role you think you're playing in your dog's life is what you call yourself, or what you think your dog might call you if they could speak. So do you use owner, keeper, guardian, caregiver, parent, or perhaps even a fur mum or fur dad? I'd love to know, so do let us know what it is that you call yourselves when you are talking about yourselves in your puppy's world. And Linda, just for fun, let's hear, what do you call yourself, or what's your husband call themselves when you're talking about the dogs?
I'm only going to answer that if you do. You know, until I got to know you, I was an owner. And I didn't think of it. I mean, I never hit my dogs, or I hope I never knowingly do anything that upsets them. I as I've become more sensitive, like with the spaniel, I realized that I omit things that would make them happier. But since knowing you, I feel much more comfortable saying I'm a pet parent, even though some of the people that walk dogs with me think, oh, that's so trendy, you know, but I don't care. I think what it is more expressive of how I now feel, because the role of a parent, as my whole career tells me is to foster as much freedom and independence in their children as possible. And it's different with a dog because a dog does not become a teenager and then an adult and then grow up and go away. So you don't go for complete independence, but you sure do, I think now, want to shoot for what we call authoritative parenting, which means I set the rules because things like traffic, you can't understand. But on the other hand, I am responsive to change if I notice in you repeated hints that things should be different or would be better if they were different. That's authoritative parenting.
It's so interesting as well that you talk about freedom. And I think we often talk about sort of five freedoms of welfare when we're talking about access to, you know, healthcare, access to a safe place to sleep, to food, all of those sort of things. But I think one of the things that we often admit when we're being the best sort of parent for our dogs that we can is giving them outlet for natural behavior. And what you just said about that sort of, if we see changes happening, sometimes we see as our dogs develop, you know, suddenly we're seeing our dogs doing herding behaviors, or they're chewing more, or they're doing things that actually can give us indications of what their breed or their multiple breed traits combined were bred to do. And us humans are responsible for that. We've done that sort of self-selection down to create these different breeds. And I think giving them outlet for natural behavior is such a big one, and unfortunately one that many pet parents do fall down on.
And I think very much of something I read once in another article, which was that dogs are the only creature we know about on the whole planet that love another species more than their own species. We owe them so much respect for that, so much gratitude for that. And that means taking the time to watch and notice and shape what we do in response to them.
100%, yeah. So when we go back to that question that was posed in the article, how do you feel about it now? Ethically, should we be owning pets?
You're asking me, or you're asking, I think everybody else should think about it for a sec, because it probably your reaction will change, because if you're anything like me, the first reaction was utterly emotional. It was that flood of guilt and fear that I might have to part with my dog if this was right, you know, which is not what the article argues ultimately. But what it has done for me, I don't know about everybody else listening, but it's made me much more keen to adopt next a rescue dog rather than to buy another puppy. Because I always say, oh, I want puppies because I want to be sure that I have the chance of bonding with them from the beginning using my human, you know, credentials. Well, sorry, I don't think so now. I think it's more important, especially since the pandemic, to help out creatures that gave everything to us when we were so lonely and so isolated and are now cast aside because we're busy. I can't bear it now. In fact, I'd like to see my house entirely full of rescue dogs. Only fortunately my husband wouldn't, but I would.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel now, is that it hasn't made me not want dogs, but it's made me want more specific kind of dogs. That I'm not trying to say to listeners either, don't think, because I'm so glad Caroline started by talking about puppies, that I think you should do the same thing. I'm just saying that's what it did to me. That's all.
Yeah. And I think we are in an unfortunate situation where so many people blindly went into ownership of dogs, whether that was for companionship, for you know, something to do and busy yourself with during lockdown, when we were missing so many social interactions. But I think that was the problem, is that people went into it blindly and they didn't understand what was expected, and that actually when you are going to be sharing your life with a dog, you need to be thinking about providing that dog with just the same love, care, attention, and meeting of all of its welfare needs as you would your children, because they are just as important a species.
And also, I think tenderly of someone that I think he was a builder that helped me sort of like 20 or 30 years ago, but he was a very dog person. And he was talking about, he just lost one of his dogs. And he said, you know, that dog came to me in a little cardboard box. I brought her home as a puppy and I had to take her out in a cardboard box. And he was so caught up. And what he was saying was that their whole life is ours. All they know is us. So we really do owe it to, you know, what's 10 minutes of cuddling them or brushing them in their favorite place? Or last night, one of my dogs was upset and I was trying to remember what you taught about tea touch. I couldn't remember, so it didn't help. But you know, could I soothe the dog? You know, I'm feeling quite differently now about the time as well, because their whole life is us.
Yeah, and as I can't remember again who it was who told me this, but our dogs' lives are so short because they already know too well how to love and how to be good. Oh. Whereas we take a lot longer to learn that.
Learn properly. It.
So we have so much to be grateful for when it comes to our dogs, and we want them to feel that same gratitude back. If you think about how your dogs may see you through their eyes, be the best person that you can for your dog. I think that's the most important. You know, whether it is right or wrong, we're in a situation where domesticated dogs live in most people's homes or a large majority of people's homes. And we just need to be the best that we can for those dogs.
I really like that. Look at the world from your dog's eyes, and particularly look at you from your dog's eyes, because you may have guessed from our discussions before, but Caroline is completely and utterly devoted to positive parenting. I came from a background where you let those dogs know who's boss, you know, so I'm not as close to that. I am almost there in the sense that, you know, it's nothing about being a boss, but I tend to be more think I'm in charge. And I think what you have to do is, yes, even children, human children, who supposedly have high intelligence, they need to know what the limits are. Dogs need to know that. But it's the way you establish those limits is what I've learned from you, Caroline.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, what we've seen of late is that there is actually an increase in aversive punishment methods being used, particularly through recent viral trends on social media platforms like TikTok, where unfortunately we are seeing dogs getting more punishment being used. And studies have shown that if we use punishment when we're working with our dogs, they're going to be less optimistic, they're going to be more stressed, they're going to be less happy. And actually, when we use science-based positive methods, we're working with our dogs, they have more optimism in life. And isn't that one of the best things that we could ever provide any species with, is to feel optimistic and hopeful about a great life ahead of them?
And can I add to that?
Yeah.
What we teach in psychology with humans is that when you punish a child, what you teach them is how to avoid the punishment. That's all you teach them. You don't teach them to do anything adaptive. You teach them to avoid the punishment. And think how negative that is. They're just left with time to, in the case of dogs, to chew their foot or whine, or, you know, because they don't know what to do now.
Yeah. And if there's an emotion that's fueling some behavior that you're not fond of in your dog, if you punish that behavior, that emotion still is going to have to go somewhere. So some other behavior will pop up elsewhere later. It might not be today or tomorrow, but it might be a year down the line, then, where you suddenly see, you know, a much more increase in difficult behavior or challenging behavior for you to navigate. So I think if I was going to be talking about, you know, this is a kind of a tricky one to do just one thing about, really, because what we're having is a bit of a debate around a topic, but it would be to kind of reiterate, as I was saying earlier, is to hold ourselves accountable to a higher level, to commit to welfare and the respect of the animals that we live with, but to make sure that we're giving them natural outlets for behavior that they were intended to be able to do.
I like that. I think for me, since it is dogs that is our topic today, not also humans, but it's from humans that the behavior is coming today, I would say that my just one thing would be to every day have some gratitude for your dog. Be so grateful for something specific about them, their soft fur, their shiny eyes, their way of lifting up your spirit, even though you've had a terrible night and you come downstairs and there's this wagging tail. You know, what can you think of to be grateful for each day for this wonderful creature in your house?
That's perfect. And what a wonderful way to finish today's episode. But we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear what your gut reaction was to that question at the start of the episode and how you're feeling now. So please do reach out to us and let us know what your thoughts were after today.
It's like those shows, isn't it, where you vote at the beginning and then you have a debate and then you vote again at the end. It's rather like that. And also, may I ask, from the human angle, that you discuss this with your other humans? I'd really like to spread this question around, because we just might, you never know where we might make a slightly more ethical world. I mean, for example, we're facing quite a threat at the moment, not with dogs, but with mink. Because mink would be the vector to spread avian flu to us, because their respiratory tract is like ours. And instead of letting mink live solo, as they do, they're lone creatures, and in the wild, they're put together on farms into small areas where they are so unhappy and breathing on each other and reinforcing any bacteria or viruses that are in the crowd. Look at that. And so I think that knowledge you can glean from anywhere and everywhere about what is my dog's natural tendencies and what do I notice in them that they love, and then help them develop that, is speaking in defense of and up for animals as a viable and just as important living creature as us, as we are. I'm very strong about it. I'll let you finish this, because otherwise I'll just go on, you know, because you know how strong I feel.
But as I said, we could be talking about any species that we are using for our own purposes. It doesn't have to just be dogs. So the question is really, you know, when it comes to ethics, that we treat all species around us, whether it be humans that you're living with, or other animals, or other animals that we're using for working, farming, sustainability, whatever it is that we're using them for, let's just be kind, be respectful, and really appreciate those around us.
And we'll say bye for now. And please do think about this and share it.